Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to this week's Big Game Preview Podcast ahead of Ireland's penultimate Guinness Men's Six Nations Championship clash with England on Saturday evening in Twickenham. The weight of expectation and stream of the hype train grow stronger and thicker as Ireland look to win historic back-to-back Grand Slams, with arguably the two toughest games to come should we lean off the hubris or embrace the favourites tag. On the panel tonight, we are lucky to have a cohesive trio who have all featured when we discussed the last meet between these sides back in August. Our two Irish representatives are familiar to our listeners, so welcome back, David Cordial and Master of None, Stephen Murphy. Welcome back, fellas.
Cheers, Gillum.
And of course, we always have an opposition representation as well. And representing England tonight is a Gloucester fan who's will try and keep the positivity dialed back compared to his World Cup appearances. Ed Price is back with us as well. Welcome back, mate.
Okay.
Well, before we kick off things, I'd just like to remind everyone on YouTube that you can listen to us on the go wherever you get your podcasts and vice versa for our audio listeners. But as always, we will start proceedings with the Matchday 23s. We'll look at Ireland first, which has one major piece of news with Mr. Reliable Hugo Keenan returning. The full 23 is as follows. Fullback Hugo Keenan. On the wings, it's Calvin Nash and James Lowe, with Robbie Henshaw and Bundiaki once again the centre. Jack Crowley partners Jameson Gibson-Park at half-back. The front row is unchanged, with Andrew Porter, Dan Sheehan and Tadhg Furlong packing down together, with Joe McCarthy and Tadhg Byrne behind them. Peter O'Mahony captains the side from blindside, with Josh Van Der Fleer and Caelan Doris rounding out the 15. And on the bench, it's a 6-2 split with Ronan Kelleher, Keane Healy, Fidley Beelam, the returning Ian Henderson, who's in for an injured James Ryan, Ryan Baird, Jack Conan, Conor Murray and Kieran Frawley. David, I'll start with yourself. One major piece of news, but pretty much as expected for Ireland. What catches your eye from the lineup?
I think the thing that jumps out, easy to miss, given he was missing for the first 3 weeks, is that apparently this week is the first week that Gairon Rose is fit and available, but has not been selected. And that's probably the first time that's been the case for quite a long time. I think anyone who's watched the first three fixtures can definitely understand why Robbie Henshaw would be retained, given how well he's slotted in that 13 shirt. But yeah, to see an Ireland starting 15 and indeed an Ireland 23 that doesn't feature a fit Gairon Rose is a first for a long time. I think given that the Farrell has opted again for a 6-2 split, Kieran Frawley's versatility in that 23 shirt probably sealed Ringrose's fate on that front too. I thought that was a fairly big call. Despite Henshaw's form, you know, Ringrose has been such a nailed on starter for Ireland for so long that it's a real vote of confidence in the kind of form that Robbie Henshaw's been showing.
Yeah, and it's the one thing that we've praised Andy Farrell's selections for in the past, is that he's backed guys when they've gotten the opportunity and they've embraced it, and Robbie Henshaw's form was patchy coming in. So to see him hit the ground running alongside Bundiaki and retain his place now as well as it's good to see as well. And Ed, we always like to get an external perspective on Ireland, and Listen, a lot of the stuff in the last 2 weeks has been a little bit OTT. I don't want you to come on here and say we're the best team in the world and to soften us up, but focusing solely on the 23 for now, what do you make of it?
We'll come on to England in a bit, but I think the important bit here is the comparisons between the two sides. So you look at the Ireland back line, you've got power, pace, confidence throughout. You've got Jack Crowley, who's come into the side and is just running it as if he'd been there for years. Definitely impressed us, you know, over this side of the Irish Sea. The back row, again, that combative, the ball carrying, great over the ball. So, you know, lots and lots of turnovers. I think probably the only thing we would say from an English point of view is the front row. We've always thought the front row is a bit of a weakness. I think, to be fair, the one I thought they might look at changing, changing Andrew Porter because of the sort of attention he got in the last game around, shall we say, the angles he was scrummaging at. Because I've no doubt that England will probably look to capitalize or at least maybe point the referee in that direction. That's probably the only area I would say that there is maybe a weakness at the moment in the Irish 23. Outside of that, I think, you know, the key bit, I suppose, you're not losing anything by bringing Hugo Keenan into the side. I think, again, comparisons around people under the high ball, just the confidence, though. You watch Ireland on against anyone, really, and the way that they are so connected, it makes such a difference going forward. So that's probably really the very little change. So you're going to see that same connectedness and I expect a lot of confidence with the ball in hand.
I'd agree there. And the scrum one is tricky because typically it's been English referees' interpretation that has cost Ireland. Luke Pearce once or twice, Wayne Barnes famously in the quarterfinal. Andrea Piardi was quite lenient. I thought Porter definitely for one of the scrums could easily have went the other way against Wales, but he did literally split Domaszewski in half as well. That's the other side of it. But then this, on the flip side, it's Nika this week, very much a technical scrummaging referee, you know, going up now against Dan Cole. He'll have the experience, he'll have the street smarts. Whether he has the power to outclass Porter is the other question, because that's what Porter's biggest strength is in that position. And Steve, we like to talk about the selection decisions in these because ultimately, you know, with Ireland, unfortunately, ultimately with Ireland, there isn't always too many big calls. I've listed Hugh O'Keenan, Gary Ringrose and James Ryan, who are absent, and Kieran Frawley. Is there any of those you want to take, or do you want to go a different direction?
No, I think they're all valid. Keenan coming back in, I did see some people saying, you know, maybe give Frawley another week if Keenan isn't 100%. But, I'd love to have the argument with someone like, why isn't he the best fullback in the world? If he's not the best fullback in the world, why isn't he? There's not too many I can think of that I would take over him. And he's just been Mr. Reliable. And we need to, as I said, we're very, very lucky to have that situation with him, considering that we also had a pretty good fullback in the names of Rob Kearney before him. So we've been blessed in that position that he's just taken the baton and ran with it. The front row is interesting because you're right, Porter, it's either he dominates a scrum or the polar opposite where the referee isn't happy with how he's getting on. I think the only thing I would like to see is if it's looking that it's going that way early on, that we react. I don't know what that necessarily looks like, but we'll get to it later on. I don't see England winning this game. I don't see them winning the game anyway, but I don't see them definitely win the game if our scrum's solid. You know what I mean? I think they need that to be a win for them to have a chance. So I'd like, again, interesting to see how that unfolds. I mean, it's not an interesting selection in the sense of that he's always going to start, but God, Dan Sheehan, like, what an absolute monster. Like, he's only seems to be getting bigger and better and stronger, and he's still so young, and he's out in the wing. He's just wrecking boys, and it's an absolute, you know, pleasure to watch. And I get just a shout out to Joe McCarthy again, coming in and just like he's been there for years, kind of similar to what Ed was saying about Crowley, that it's just coming in and it's like, it's not that big of an adjustment. And again, we were chatting in our WhatsApp earlier on. That's also applauded to Farrell and his system, that these guys come in and they're put in situations to succeed. They're not probably asked to do anything that they can't do. And that's the nucleus around them as well. And Last one I'd probably highlight is it's the Furlong decision. I'd love to maybe open it to the group here, because like Furlong, he hasn't really been in form, well, the form that we know of him in probably what, 1.5, 2 years. But obviously he's such.
Yeah, no, I might jump in because I had a feeling we might touch on tight end anyway, because it's been something that's been talked about. I know some people reckon, like, I'd be of the opinion the gap between Furlong and, say, Tom O'Toole or Jaeger or Bealum is very, very small. Some people would reckon the gap between Furlong and the rest is getting bigger. But watching the games back, I've actually been impressed with Furlong. I think his ruck work has been very good. He probably hasn't taken on as much ball carrying, as much tackling. And I think that's why you're seeing a more rounded but less explosive 80 minutes, which probably isn't a bad thing. And then you have to remember, when you have someone like Joe McCarthy in there, who is a step up in power, Van der Fleer is a powerful athlete, and you mentioned Porter and Sheehan, it's probably better for him. He probably doesn't have to do the heavy lifting, you know, no pun intended there. So it's probably interesting there. But then I do see the point that some people say, is he playing as well? Bealum's playing well. Like, I think realistically, you could go down the top five Irish tight heads are all in unbelievable form. And I'm going to include Jack Ainger in that. Like, they're all playing really, really well. Furlong, O'Toole, Jaeger, Bealum, and Ainger. So maybe it's just an embarrassment of riches. Maybe we just, you know, randomly select three of them to go to South Africa in the summer and two of them stay at home, get a month off. I don't know. David, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, no, just on Tighe and on the shift in his role. You know, he was out for a time. There was some stuff. His father unfortunately passed away, so he was on compassionate leave for that. But I think it's important to remember as well that he's as we all do, he's aging. You know, he's 30 now. Joe McCarthy is almost a full 10 years younger than him. And when it comes to dynamic ball carrying, you know, it makes sense that you'd go with someone younger, maybe someone who has a bigger tank. I think that goes a long way. I wouldn't be in the camp of thinking that the gap between Furlong and the others is as big as it's ever been. I actually think the gap between him and Bealum has narrowed a lot. I think last tournament, when Furlong was missing for the first few fixtures, I thought Bealum stepped up in a way that you almost wouldn't notice that he wasn't there, which was not something that we ever thought would be the case in years before that. How close the other two behind them are, I don't know that Tom O'Toole has had enough time in the Ireland shirt yet to really make that case. Ollie Jaeger certainly hasn't, you know, he's sitting on the one cap. But the fact that we're now in a position where we have four tight heads who you can switch between, and certainly, yeah, if I had a choice, I'd go with Furlong and Bealum every day of the week. But I wouldn't be scared to have the other two called up either, is a good position. And certainly when you compare it to the other side of the scrum, where it is really just Andrew Porter. Yes, Keane Healy's very good, but he's also 36. And then we have, you know, the likes of Lachman and Kilcoyne, who are fine players, but just wouldn't provide Andrew Porter levels of physicality. So I think as tight heads go, all of a sudden we seem to have actually a pretty good depth chart on that side of the scrum.
Or Dave Kilcoyne, he's injured for the rest of the season. He's letting Ireland down by not being available. Shocking. Like,
I maybe didn't notice because I'm obviously a Leinster man, but man, Kilcoyne has some awful history, awful trouble with injuries.
The last 3 or 4 years in particular, it hasn't been great. But to be fair, that's where you have to give credit to Jeremy Luckman. He has stepped up at a provincial level, but kind of like O'Toole, as good as his form has been at provincial level, we don't know if he's the top end power. We don't know if he has the ceiling, you know, to break down and be top class at international level. But again, I'm still fairly confident, as I said, and the roles is an important one. Like, even say this is England, I'd possibly have gone with Jaeger because I feel like scrummaging is going to be just slightly more important, and maybe just power around the breakdown and things like that. But next week I'd have gone with Bealum because you're going to need that a little bit more explosion in the carry rather than around the breakdown. So that's horses for courses isn't a bad thing. It's been something we discussed about Ireland before, so it's always worth touching on. David, I might get you to jump in on James Ryan, his potentially season-ending injury. If it's a torn bicep, it's a horrible one, and we hope it's not, because that would be a tough blow for him. Gary Ringrose, as you mentioned. But James Ryan in particular, he's not there. Ian Henderson is in. What do you think there? Do you think it's going to make a difference? Personally, I don't, and I've had this discussion with yourself. How do you see it going? Are you still confident in Henderson and Ryan Baird, who can go for second row?
Oh, I think very much so. I mean, it you know, if you can link, you link it back to the Gary Ringrose conversation. You know, when a player drops out and you have a test line to fill their slot, you can't really complain. Ian Henderson is a phenomenal player. You know, captain's Ulster, absolute stalwart for Ireland, for club, for years. James Ryan, I know Farrell has just said that his tournament's over. Obviously, Faz only has purview over the national scene, but as a provincial fan, you'd be very concerned if we were to have to see out the rest of the season without James Ryan. But at a test level, no. I mean, Ian Henderson is not a step down at all. You know, we saw him swap in for Ryan, start for him against in the Scotland game of the World Cup, and then come in for him when he was injured in the quarterfinal. Obviously, didn't go our way, but it definitely not because Ian Henderson was there instead of James Ryan. So in terms of switching out, I wouldn't have any concerns about Ian Henderson coming in there. And I think for him, it's an opportunity, as I'm sure, the next time Gary Ringrose gets an opportunity as well, it could be that little fire that just gets that extra inch out of it. I remember Josh van der Vleer famously saying just before he won World Player of the Year that one of the things that really got him going was Will Connors. You know, he was nailed on that seven shirt, and then this other lad comes along and starts to put pressure on him. And sometimes that's exactly what players need to really hit that height again. And I think it's a height Ian Henderson won't have any problem hitting.
Absolutely, and it's funny you mentioned, the fact that you trust him. When that graphic that kind of, it became a famous graphic straight away about that compared the four second rows coming into the tournament, McCarthy, Ryan, Byrne, and Henderson. There was nothing between them on club form. You look at the every metric possible across the Six Nations so far. There's pretty much nothing between three of them, and to be fair, Tadhg Byrne has been godlike in the last three games, so you can kind of separate that one a small bit, but like that is kind of the quality you're looking at, and it's a luxury. Maybe it's not a great way to segue into England, but anyways, we're going to do that. We're going to move on to them. Their team was named earlier today, and it starts with a big call straight off the back with Northampton's George Fairbank selected at full back, and Emmanuel Faye-Wubosu of Exeter Chiefs is named on the right wing with Tommy Freeman on the left. Henry Slade and Ollie Lawrence are once again the centre pairing. With fit again, Alex Mitchell starting at nine alongside George Ford, who is at 10. The front row sees Ellis Genge and Dan Cole partner down alongside captain Jamie George of Saracens. Mauro Itoje and George Martin are in the second row, which means Ollie Chessam of Leicester moves to the blindside flank, with Sam Underhill on the open side and Ben Hearl at number eight, not at inside centre. Who knew? Who could have seen that one coming? Theo Dan leads off the bench alongside Joe Marler, Will Stewart, Chandler Cunningham-South, Alex Dombrandt, Danny Kerr, Marcus Smith, and because David likes to throw that term around, Tess Lyon, Elliot Daly as well. Ed, I'll come to you on England. Plenty to discuss here. Where do you want to start?
Well, we'll start at the back three. I think for a lot of England supporters, I do understand the maybe the desire for a bit more pace in the back line, and Freddie Stewart doesn't necessarily offer that pace. He isn't the quickest fullback, but he's pretty ridiculous under the high ball, and I would suspect that that will be a tool that Ireland would look to use at the weekend. They definitely will be now. Let's put it that way. I thought George Fairbank, you know, he played in that Scotland game. It looked like what a great decision. You know, 10 minutes in, he scores a try. 10 minutes later, not so good. Definitely made me look like a bit of a prat on Twitter. Anyway, I personally would think Freddie Stewart should be is our number one fullback. They're trying to inject a bit of pace and a bit of dynamism into the back line. They're definitely going to get that with Faye-Wubosu, Wubosi. He looked exciting and looked good when he came on in the short time he was on against Scotland, scored a try. It's whether we can give him space and time. That's really the key for England. If they can give him space and time, then you'll be able to see what he can do. But that's been the issue all the way through with the Six Nations with England this year, that they look like a team that have maybe met once on the training ground. The connections, unlike Ireland, as I was saying earlier, unlike Ireland, the connections aren't there. Ollie Lawrence should be and probably is our number. It should be one of the first names on the team sheet for England. He's been consistently really good for Bath over the last couple of years. Can punch a hole, has got really good hands. Again, it's just getting him the ball
in good positions. So from the back line, they're the kind of things I'm okay with the centre partnership. I think one interesting thing, we kind of mentioned Elliot Daly at the end there. None of us on our pod like Elliot Daly at international level. We think he's past it. And it's difficult to determine whether it's his fault or Slade's fault that there's a massive dog leg about three times a game with their blitz defence. We'll find out this week because obviously he's not playing. Or he's not starting anyway. And then other than that, the only thing to really mention, I think, and it's been remarked upon a lot, is the just lack of any sort of balance in the back row. We've got no ball carriers. That's why Ollie Chessam's kind of been drafted into the back row, I think. But then you've got Alex Donbrandt on the bench. Why don't you just play Alex Donbrandt, who is a ball carrier and plays eight? There's so many weird decisions within the England squad, so it's quite difficult to work out. I mean, Will Stewart probably isn't the best scrummager, and you've got Joe Hayes, who's available and has been destructive all season for Leicester. Again, Chandler Cunningham-South, if you want to play a back rower, why put Chessam into a situation like that? And then equally, I suppose, Marcus Smith, he must not be 100%, because my expectation would be if you want pace and you want dynamism in that back line, you start with Marcus Smith. So the only assumption probably is he's not 100%, but we haven't got anybody else because Finn Smith's injured. So that's kind of where we are with it. I just think there's so many areas within this team that there's just not the right balance, and there's players that should be being picked who aren't even in the squad. So my confidence isn't particularly high, as you can tell. But I, you know, there's enough quality and there's enough standout performers there. Maro Toje has been getting better throughout. I think since the World Cup has really stepped up with Saracens and I think he's looked pretty good for England. My only concern, and we mentioned it around Ireland, was Dan Cole has got a lot of experience. He's got a lot of nous, but he is old. And I worry that the replacement we've got, which is going to be Will Stewart, I just don't think he's got enough. And if Porter can see off Cole, he could probably play the whole 80. He doesn't even have to. I genuinely think he probably would be fine. Genge will be an interesting one though as well, because he's been kind of bubbling away, and I wonder whether he's due a big performance. But look, a lot of things are going to have to go right for England, and a lot of things are going to have to go wrong for Ireland to see even a possible shock. So, you know, putting players in the wrong position doesn't really help.
That's one way of looking at it. I think someone said it in a recent podcast that England's team, on paper, it looks balanced. But when it starts getting, when the rugby match actually unfolds and they're knocked ever so slightly off balance, that's when it just looks a bit pear-shaped. Like, you've seen it. The last Scotland try that was scored in the Calcutta Cup final, Scotland have a pod. They've got Finn at 10. They've got a pod of forwards beside him. They've got the centres out the back. They've got Van der Merwe on the wing. Everyone's ready to pounce. England, they're still getting back to the off, to the behind the ruck. And it's just complete six and sevens. They don't know where to be. And I see the reports of the players coming out saying, oh, we're spending too much time on defence. It's like, well, you conceded like 50 points to France last year, you conceded 30 points to Ireland, 30 points to Scotland. Something has to give. Like, you won't be a tough team to beat if you're conceding 3-4 tries a game, and that's probably a crucial factor. And David, like, as we said, the 23 as a whole probably isn't overly scary. There's some good name power, fair enough. But if England are going to cause us problems, is it going to have to be set piece and defence taking another step up again?
Yeah, I think so. I think set piece is so important to Ireland, probably the line out even more so than the scrum. I think there was a statistic that 30% of all of the tries across all of the teams scored in the first three matches were scored off Ireland's line out. If England can get up and disrupt that, they could really slow down Ireland's ability to generate the kind of attacking ball they want. I also think that one of the keys to stopping Ireland is slowing them down. We place such a high premium on quick ruck ball, on Gibson Park getting in there and getting the ball away as fast as possible. If England can slow that down, I think that could really help to stop Ireland's attack at source. I noted that I think it's Sam Underhill is back in the starting back row. I think this is the first time he'll play Ireland since I think 2020. I mean, he's played for England more recently, but I think it's the first time Lallana gets out since 2020. So I remember him being a fair nuisance at the ruck. So if they can get in there, if they can disrupt that, if they can make it more difficult for Ireland to generate the kind of ruck speed that they want, if they can get up in the line out and cause us trouble there, I think that's their best bet. Because as you said, they are conceding more tries than realistically they can expect to win games doing. So I think the real key to them is going to be slowing Ireland down, making it difficult for us to play the game that we want to play. As Ed said, they're not starting Marcus Smith, so scintillating attack, probably not the order of the day. What they need to do is they need to grab us by the scruff of the neck and drag us to the ground and make it impossible for us to play the match that we want to play.
Absolutely. And it's funny, I did an analysis piece on Ireland last week, I believe, but in the follow week anyway. And like, I looked at the lineup, and Sheehan's throwing has been fantastic, like absolutely brilliant. Of the three or so lineups that Ireland have missed in the first three games, two of them were botched lifts. That's where Chesham coming in at six makes a lot of sense. Just get an extra body in there, get an extra bit of height. But then Ireland have Peter O'Mahony at six. They'll be replacing him with Ryan Baird after about 50 minutes, 55 minutes, judging on the last three games. Baird is a fantastic defensive lineout option. He can jump at 2, 4, or 6, and that's again where the questions pop up. And Stephen, we'll kind of move on to, you know, where we see the game being won and lost and why and how much and all that now. And I'll start with yourself because, you know, defence, set piece, crucial. We're going to hear those a lot across the next 2 to 3 days. But where do you see it being won and lost? If Ireland are going to lose, where will it be? And if they're going to win, where is it going to be?
This could come back to haunt me, but I just don't see. The only way I can see England beating us is if they do the polar opposite of what they're trying to do. I look back, and the two teams that have caused Ireland trouble the last 2 or 3 years is France and New Zealand. Both are obviously incredible defensive teams as well, but have an attacking prowess. You look back to that quarter final against New Zealand, and you know they were chipping balls over the top, and it caused Ireland all types of problems. And Ireland played pretty well that quarter final. I don't want to bring it back up because it'll only get annoyed again. But we played pretty well overall that quarter final, and we stuck to our game plan. But they just got to a stage where they just scored that one try more than us, or that one more score more than us, and we didn't have the answer to it. And France 2 years ago were one of the best attacking teams, if not the best attacking team in the world, with DuPont and Entomac in their pomp. And Ireland, I think Ireland will welcome a dogfight. Like, England don't do anything better than Ireland in terms of making it a dogfight. I think they can definitely, and they'll try. I think great point about the line out. I think England will attack that with all their might, because they have to disrupt that. I think that's the only way you can slow it down. And the same with the scrum. But I think you're just slowing it down. I don't think you're going to. I still don't think England have enough. They're not going to pass it wide. Like, when I saw Marcus Smith on the bench, I think, Ed, you might be right, he might not be 100%, but I was like, oh, okay, this is exactly what Ireland wanted to see. They want to see George Ford at 10. I think they would have been a bit more scared of seeing Marcus Smith at 10. And I just went back through the scoring of England since the start of 2023, and the same for Ireland. I just see, like, England haven't scored. They've scored over 30 points in 3 games since the start of 2023, and that was against Italy, Japan, and Chile. Every other game they've been less than that, and they've scored less than 20 points 8 times in those 16 games. So half the time they're scoring less than 20 points, whereas Ireland have scored over 30 points in 8 of their 16 games. So half the games they're playing, they're scoring over that 30 points, and they've only scored less than 20 points twice since the start of 2023. So they're always in that 20 to 30 range, and I just don't see England getting to that. And if they do score a couple of tries, I feel like it will be off a sloppy up and under that they just pounce on. If it's ball in hand and phase play, I just don't think Ireland are going to sweat this too much. And again, I'm very willing to be clipped on that. But the one thing I will say is, like, Felix Jones will be licking his lips at this, by the way. Like, he will want to send a statement, you know, with his connections with Ireland, the South Africa connection as well, haven't beaten them in the World Cup. Now, he hasn't been able to stop us in the last, what, 2 games that we've played against them, but he'll be looking to really upset us. And he is, by all accounts, a bit of a genius, so it's possible. But the only way I can see England beating us is by being, you know, expansive and throwing the ball wide, and by their selection and everything we've seen from the Borthwick era. I just don't see that happening.
That's the thing. And it's funny, like, just bouncing back to line out again and how England attack these things. Like, one of the luxuries that Ireland have now in the fact that they've got Jack Crowley at 10 is they could throw to the front more often. We've seen it against France. I think over half of Ireland's lineouts were in the front pot. And because of that, they can do that because Crowley is just a little bit more durable, you know, takes the ball to the line a bit more than Sexton. Understandable, there's about 15 years of age between them. And, you know, that's one of the luxuries you have there. And then with England, you know, with that defence, like, if they kick the leather off the ball against Ireland, Ireland have more passes than anyone else. They've had over 500 passes in their last two games. They never managed that over any two-game period in the Six Nations last year, for example. So, do you kick to them? You can't really. You know, you can't. England are not designed to hold on to the ball. Even when they have the ball, there is moments where it'll just bounce off George Forbank's head, as we've seen against Scotland, and you can't do anything about moments like that as well. And it really does feel like England have to do something special, and probably Ireland need to play down. And I understand this is a conversation we had last October as well about Ireland playing down to lose. But it is true. That's where England are at. And Ed, I want to get your perspective on kind of how you see Ireland being stopped, because you mentioned the scrum, we mentioned the line-out, I mentioned the defence, but as Stephen said, like, do England even score enough? Like, surely George Ford isn't going to kick 9 drop goals to win this game.
No, I mean, there was the one phase of play, and I thought, for the whole Six Nations, I thought was really telling. And if you were an England coach, you'd probably be thinking, this is going to be a bit of a problem here. It was the God knows how many phases that Ireland and Wales played. I can't remember who it was. It was ridiculous. It was something like 8 minutes of play.
Yeah, 7.5 minutes. But it wasn't all phases because there was kicking, but 7.5 minutes.
There was kicking and stuff like that. But the ball was in play for 7.5 minutes. And I look at that squad and I think, there's a lot of over 30s there from an England point of view. And I just think, yeah, that's going to be an issue. The biggest problem for England at the moment is, and you referenced him earlier, which was around the defence. So Felix Jones coming in, we're trying to put in a blitz defence, a system that you'd think most rugby players would be comfortable with, but clearly not. And we're still conceding a lot of tries. That's mainly because, again, we're not connected, particularly in the backs. The attack is all over the place. And I don't think that's been helped by the churn in coaching. We've not had a consistent coaching setup for 4 years. You go back as far as Eddie Jones, we get a season out of most defence or attack coaches and then somebody else comes in. So you've not got really any platform that when guys are coming into the squad, like you said about the guys who can fit in, because Farrell has built up a brilliant system in place where guys can slot in. They know exactly the type of rugby you're going to be playing. I mean, it does help you've got less teams to go back to, but the principle still works. So England are having to kind of develop a lot of this on the fly with a coaching system that, again, probably will. I think is changing again come the summer. So that's a big issue. I don't think we've had that continuity at all within the setup, and that's a massive issue. I would have said that England's best chance probably is to, as you said, Steve, slow everything down, get the ball off the field. I imagine there might be a lot of very basic exits. So 22, get it up to halfway, target the line out, try and swamp Ireland on first or second phase and see if we can get a turnover or we can create a mistake and then go from there. And then the other aspect is to keep everybody on the field. Ken, you're laughing, but I mean, you know, how many games in the last few years where England have played Ireland and England have had a man sent off? People sent off?
It's 3 for England, 1 for Ireland, I think. Yeah. Something like that.
And I'm not being funny. Ireland can probably cope a little bit better than England do. So that's number one. The discipline has got to be absolutely perfect. You can't give penalties away and definitely can't be given yellow cards and red cards. I mean, England, I think, to be fair to them, have been better recently. If we take the sort of abomination of what happened in the first game against Argentina in the World Cup, which probably you could argue now wouldn't be a red card if you look at the progression of these things. I think generally they seem to be better in that regard. But my big concern is just the number of penalties we give away. We still give far too many penalties away in stupid positions, and just gives teams like Ireland, who are too, you know, they're too good to pass up four or five opportunities to go to the corner and go for a mall. We're not talking about Italy or Japan here. Ireland will convert. So for England to win, as I said, we have to basically play the best game of rugby we've played in probably 5 years and hope that Ireland have a really bad off day. And I think probably a lot of that will come down to refereeing interpretation, maybe someone doing something stupid. And it's a shame, really, from my point of view. Obviously, you guys will probably enjoy this, but from my point of view, it's a shame that it's not closer, because I think actually having a strong England, a strong Ireland, a strong France, it makes the tournament a much better tournament. One of the, probably not criticisms, but one of the issues of this tournament is just being Ireland being so much better than everybody else that it's, after that France game, everyone went, well, Ireland are going to win the Grand Slam, aren't they? Which it must be a lovely feeling. I've not had that since 2003, to be honest. So it's,
I mean, it's grand, but like we all know how 2003 ended. That's kind of the hint of jealousy that kicks in, I suppose.
you just got to do it at that key bit in the World Cup. Yeah. That's the difference, isn't it?
I do want to get your take on one thing that's been bugging me about this England team. And I meant to touch it on the last point and it slipped my mind. But England's defensive system is up and in. As you said, there is an element of just, it's not that hard, lads. Just bite in, stay connected, stay cohesive. Like there is something a little bit more simplistic about it. Do you think there's an issue slightly with England's effort? And I use that word somewhat ironically. You know, we're four fans sitting here talking about it, but like when you hear about, you know, complaints to the media, when you hear about, when you just see some of the basic errors that are being made against Italy and against Scotland, do you feel like there is a little bit of work ethic issues there? And maybe that does come from the constant churning of coaches and so on, and just constant change as well.
I think the biggest issue for England recently in terms of the changing room is there is a leak, and it's a big leak, and it's a consistent leak. Someone in that changing room, and it's someone who's obviously been there a long time, has been leaking stuff consistently. I don't know who that would be. I literally have no idea, but someone is definitely, there are issues in the changing room that are going to be difficult to solve in the short term. My guess would be someone fairly senior. That would be my guess, that it has to be, because you wouldn't, I don't think, otherwise they would probably would have been out in and out of the squad, etc. So effort is a difficult one. It's difficult to say that these players aren't putting 100% in. What I do think is that there may be a lack of belief in the systems or a lack of belief in the coaching staff. And I would guess that probably comes from, if you look at, say, Northampton, who in the Premiership, who are playing some really expansive, exciting, attractive rugby. And then you look at what Steve Borthwick plays, it's chalk and cheese. And I think that's probably an element of it. You look in the Premiership now, the better teams, the more exciting teams are doing better. And the teams that are playing kind of the staid rugby that we saw 2-3 years ago are struggling. And I just wonder whether that's maybe an element.
And one of the things that strikes me about Northampton as well, having watched them live, unfortunately, is they look well coached. They just look like it's the same coaching staff as well as there last year, but they look like they've just fully clicked and it looks like a progression. With Borthwick's England, it's just so choppy changey, isn't it? And like you do mention, like, if you're playing this attacking rugby, this free-flowing rugby, even if you're one of the Saracens lads who has been top of the mountain for so long, this isn't what's going to get you up and get you motivated. You know, there's that element. I do think England, for that, I think Jamie George is the perfect man to be captain right now when you look at the squad profile. But they do miss Laws and Farrell. Like, they still need them to... They're the lads who dragged them over the line in the quarterfinal. Like Farrell literally dragged them over the line against Fiji. And sometimes that is as much of an element as well, do you think?
Yeah, the other aspect I think is that I think even some of the squad know that this is a transition year. So if you're someone like Danny Kerr or you're Dan Cole, you know that probably this is your last dance as an England player. Joe Marler maybe even as well. There's a lot of players like that. So again, how really into the coaching structure and the system are you going to be if you know that actually by the end of this it doesn't really make a difference? Danny Cares gets his 100 cap on Saturday, you know, great, but it's not you've got Alex Mitchell, who is definitely R9 now, and then you've got people like Randall and a few others who are sort of biting around the edges. And again, you know, a lot of England supporters don't care. Let's be honest. A lot of the people who watch England, and I should, there's a, I don't know if it's the same in Ireland, but there are England supporters, and then there are your club supporters who want England to win and are England supporters. And there are a lot of people who are club supporters who look at the England squad and go, that has no bearing on what we watch week in, week out. And the guys that should be in this squad. And as a Gloucester fan, I'm very biased here, but Zach Mercer, yes, he's had a bit of a time off because through injury, but every time he's played for Gloucester this year, he's been the best player on the park. And he was, you know, consistently the best player in France. So outside of Dupont, you know, I mean, you don't get player of the season in France if you're not half decent. So it just seems daft. You've got these players who are really, really good players that can offer dynamism, go forward and power and do the job that you're supposed to be doing at eight, and they're not even getting in the squad. So that's the issue. But equally, there's a lot of England supporters don't care. They're happy to go to Twickenham, pay their 200 quid for two tickets and sit there and drink overpriced beer for an afternoon. And that's the disconnect, you know. Who are you gonna really worry about?
Yeah, well, I know who the unions will worry about, especially in this post-COVID world of sport. You know, the ones that get the bums on seats and will pay that £100 or €100, they are slightly more important, whether we like it or not. And just to end on England, I listened to Ron McGarr and Brian O'Driscoll this morning on Off the Ball. They talked about the English structures, and it's amazing to see O'Driscoll covers a lot of Premiership. He was, you know, oh, there's a lot of good players, a lot of great talent there. You know, they got to make it work. Ron O'Gara from the La Rochelle angle, he's asking, well, what do we expect? The English clubs haven't done anything in Europe the last couple of years. So you do have to weigh up, maybe the outside perspective is a little bit more favourable. Don't get me wrong, like guys like Tommy Freeman, George Furbrook, Alex Mitchell have cut open proper teams. But there is that kind of counterbalance to it as well. But we'll leave it on England at that, because I do want to get predictions before we roll off. David, I'll start with you. We've all been pretty effusive so far in tipping Ireland, but just how do you see the game unfolding as in general?
I think Ireland will start fast. That seems to be their MO at the moment. I would hope that we would score first. I do think there's the possibility that in that middle 40, things might, if England are able to successfully slow the game down, it could get a bit turgid, a bit tense. If you think back to the Wales game, there was a period there in the middle of the game. I think we had one player in the bin when Wales were on attack, and it was very close to becoming a one score game again. And from there, anything can happen. You know, it's a one off match. But I think if Ireland can get through that purple patch and can keep things going the way that at the pace that they want them to go at, the final 20 should see them seal out the game. So I don't know if, are we at prediction time yet, or are we?
Yep, fire away.
I'm gonna say it's gonna be Ireland to win it, and it'll be by at least two scores, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's by three.
Yeah, that's strong. There is the Twickenham factor to weigh in, and that's something that's been on my mind as well, because apart from that loss to France last year, which I mentioned earlier, England don't lose by big scores to Twickenham, and rightly so. No home team should in the Six Nations. But at the same time, I just look at that Irish team. I think as good as Frawley looked on first watch against Wales, when I watched it back, he did look, I was going to say incoherent, but I don't think that's the opposite of cohesive, actually. But he looked a little bit off, in the same way that Jimmy O'Brien, Mike Lowry, Rob Balakun, guys like that have done in the past. I think Keenan's going to slot in effortlessly. I look at, I think England are really going to struggle in the second row. Like, I told you, yeah, fair enough. But like, look at how well Ty Byrne is playing at the moment. And like, Chesham and Martin haven't really put a finger on Leinster in the last couple of years when they've played them. That would be a bit of a worry. And I just, you look at that bench then as well. I think Ireland's bench is, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see that rolling of a couple of subs at once. Kelleher, probably Beelum, Henderson, Conan, Baird, probably all going to come on at once with about half an hour to go. And to be quite honest, I know which ones I'm taking versus Cunningham South, Don Brandt, Will Stewart, and Theo Dan. Although, to be fair, I think Theo Dan's a good player, but I think it's going to be Ireland. I don't think it's going to be comprehensive. I think maybe 10, 12 points, but I think it'll be an expected 10 to 12 points. You just want to jump in, David, before we move on?
Yeah, just on your touching on point, you know, history is always a decent reference point. But I think with this Ireland team, it's not about, without sounding overly grandiloquent, it's not about England. You know, it's about Ireland. You know, teams don't win by blowout scores in France until Ireland did. You know, teams don't win three-match series in New Zealand until Ireland did. So I think that's why if England want to stay in this game, they have to make it really, really, really annoying for Ireland. Because if Ireland are allowed to play the game that they want to play, it won't really matter who's on the other side of the pitch.
And that's ultimately why I think Ireland are going to have it, maybe not all their own way, but I think they're going to treat it like they did the French game, where they're going to try and make it a little bit chaotic. You see in the first few minutes of that game, like I highlighted in that article, for the try that Craig Byrne scores, Jack Crowley has 5 passing options. They literally threw everything at France, knocked them off the bike and said, right, get back up now when we have our foot in your throat. I think they're going to do the same thing to England because that's what Scotland did. The only difference is it took Scotland 50 minutes, I think, to properly dislodge England. I think Ireland are going to do it quicker. I think that's going to be crucial. And I expect to see, you know, the likes of Hugo Keenan, who I mentioned. I think the wingers are going to get a lot of change. If we can get to width properly, which we didn't do, I just find it hard to see. But England will make it tough. I think they will try and make it tough. They will. But ultimately, discipline is another factor. Ed, you're the one who brought up discipline. You're a resident English guest. Maybe not the most positive night, but how...
It'd be lovely to come on like when I'm actually positive once. I am positive generally sometimes. So the two, I think Ireland will win. I'm going to be out front, and I think it will be a little bit closer than I think some of you in the press have suggested. I understand why that there's obviously the possibility that Ireland could just absolutely smash to England, and I think that's the back of my head about record scores and the rest of it, but I get the feeling that probably what England will try and do, certainly they'll slow it down generally, but I think they'll be ultra aggressive that first 20 minutes because you have to, because Ireland starts so quickly and so positively. So ultra aggressive, really, really try and make Ireland make mistakes, get into the heads. And I know this is going to sound really weird, but make it emotional for Ireland. One of the things that I always thought, you go back in time when Ireland had lots of really good teams and had really good opportunities to beat England, and they didn't because they were too emotional. And I think they're too good a team probably to be falling into that trap. But I understand it. Look, we're English. We all know there's history. And sometimes in the previous years, Ireland have got a little bit too emotional and too focused on some stuff that they probably shouldn't do. If England can get annoy them and get into their heads a little bit, and I'm actually surprised, this is one area I think I'm surprised at actually, is the English press normally, when their back's against the wall, particularly the rugby press, normally start to stir it a bit, but they haven't. In actual fact, the Irish press have kind of done that job for us with some of the stuff that's out there. But I just think, yeah, they'd be the only ways I can see England really, really putting something in with Ireland. I reckon something like 27, 21, 27, 22. Keep it close, maybe till about the 60th minute. Even I wouldn't surprise me if England were winning about 58 minutes. And then Ireland will, those changes, as you mentioned, will make a big difference. And I think then Ireland will probably pull away. And then that mental thing of, well, it's Ireland, we aren't going to beat them. And then they'll win.
I can see that as well. And it's that mental thing is, it can sound so cliched, but when you think about Saracens, when they were in their pomp, they were just so annoying to play against. You know, like you could hear, you'd hear no one in the stands, but you'd hear Maro Itoje whooping and hollering, and Ben Earl has continued that now. And like, maybe that's what it takes. Maybe it is those, maybe this is the day that, you know, celebrating a knock on will actually help you. It won't. Like 9 times out of 10, it won't, but it will once. And maybe it will help them this time. It did, to be fair, 2 years ago when they celebrated every scrum like they'd won the lotto, and it did help. But, you know, Tyke Furlong did that the last day as well by just asking for another scrum, like a good South African fullback that he is. Stephen, I'll finish on yourself. You're the first one to say that you think Ireland will win today, and I'll let you round things off on how you see it going.
Yeah, no, I just want to say before we get into this, like, I'm can't wait for 2 years when Ed Price's revenge tour starts, where he just goes on all the Irish podcasts and slags how bad Ireland are and how good England are. So, Ed, I will come on your podcast for that. I'll take the beating, like you've been great over the last year. Also interesting, do we think that, sorry, this is a tangent, but home effect or home crowd, whatever that term is, what's the term I'm looking for?
Home advantage.
Do we see that going away a bit? Like, it's a small, you know, bit. Everyone knows how bad the atmosphere is at Ireland. So, like, you know, these away trips to Twickenham, while they're still intimidating, it'll probably get easier and easier to go to these away grounds, just because the people going, as we said, the real fans are priced out. So the people going aren't even watching the rugby, but just interesting to note. But I think Ireland will win 27-10 is my score prediction. I just don't see England scoring more than one try and maybe a penalty. I just don't see where it comes from, unless they really do disrupt our entire set piece, which is, it's possible, but I don't know. I keep falling back on 27-10, so we'll see.
Well, we've never been overly accurate in predictions on this podcast, so no one put the house on 27-10. Fair enough,
Ireland. There's a reason we're not bookies, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason why we're doing this on a Thursday night, I suppose. But, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. Thanks to Stephen, to David, and to Ed for coming on tonight. As always, remember, you can catch the game on RT2 or ITV or whoever your local broadcaster is, from 4:45 p.m. Irish time on Saturday afternoon. Elsewhere this weekend, on Saturday, we have Italy hosting Scotland at 2:15 on Virgin Media 1 and ITV. And on Sunday, Wales take on France at 3 p.m. That is on RT2 and BBC One. While finally, the Ireland under-20s are back in action on their Grand Slam quest as well on Friday night against England. 7:15 p.m. kickoff there in the Rec in Bath. And that's live on RT2 as well. We'll be back on Sunday night with our weekly review show. But for now, that's all we have time for. If you like what you see or hear, please do like, subscribe, leave a review. But for now, and until next time, take it easy.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.